a test of the audio.
Okay, Representative Starr, come on up. I'm going to open a public hearing on House Bill 3877. Representative Starr?
See, I'm not prepared to testify on House Bill 3877.
Okay.
I'm here to testify on HR 6.
Okay, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Bill 3877. And I'm going to, and I suppose, hey, we've had a public hearing on it. It's still alive, Representative. And I'm going to... open a public hearing on H.R. 6. Representative Hill. I mean, Representative Stark. Why am I doing that? You guys don't even look alike.
We're both in Hillsborough, Mr. Chair. Yeah. You can get those Hillsborough representatives mixed up every now and then. Thank you. For the record, Bruce Stark, State Representative, House District 3 in Washington County. House Resolution 6. Relatively simple little resolution. I think, though, that it's an important one. I appreciate you, Mr. Chair, scheduling for a hearing. I'd ask that at the end of this hearing, you move this bill to the full floor for their consideration. I'm here today to support H.R. 6, which asks the Speaker to have an interim committee look at and examine the safety and security authority of state capital. Several recent incidents across the nation have brought the issue of capital safety, really safety of government buildings in general, to the forefront. In California, a semi-truck crashed into the state capitol in Sacramento and caught the capitol on fire. In 1998, security at our nation's capitol building was compromised with a gunman coming in and killing two police officers. South Carolina last year, 10,000 protesters descended on the state capitol. Would Oregon be prepared if such an event occurred here? Just last month, a woman was rifling through desks and purses and personal belongings in our Capitol building here. And yesterday, a bomb threat in the Capitol parking garage. Take a moment and think about when you arrived here at the Capitol this morning. As legislators, we drove right underneath the Capitol building, parked in the basement, and took an elevator to our offices or took up the stairs or however you came into the building. You passed through no security to get here. To get to where you're sitting this morning. If you came through the front doors and across the rotunda through the state street entrance, you went through no security. People had access to our offices, to the galleries in both chambers, to the hearing room. We have a very open building, very open process. I think it is important to say that my concerns have nothing to do with the lack of trust or the ability of the state police, Capitol Mall Patrol, nor do I necessarily think we need metal detectors and searches at every entrance. But I think that these are sobering statistics and facts that suggest we should look at how secure we are in this building. I think it's important that we not be reactive to something, that we wait until we have some kind of tragedy before we address this issue. The state capitol receives on average 1 to 5 threatening phone calls each month. Most states average less than 1. 3 out of 5 of those are considered serious. These calls include bomb threats, threats to legislators and other state officials and their staff. We have no barriers to prevent someone from driving right up to the Capitol or right under the Capitol, similarly to what happened in California. Now, how hard would it be for someone to drive a rider truck into the Capitol basement? It's virtually unlimited. For example, one of my staffers came to the building at 2 in the morning to pick up papers for a 7 a.m. hearing that I had the next day. He gained access to the building via the basement. The only person that asked him why he was here was a janitor who accepted his statement that he was staff and needed to get something from my office. He saw no one else, no police, no security, just the cleaning staff. I believe it's time to review the security measures at the state capitol. We don't have to create a special committee. There are interim committees that could have the responsibility of looking at this issue to examine the practices and procedures, as well as look to see how other states are handling security issues. I think it's important, again, that we be proactive and not wait for something tragic to happen. Colleagues, this building belongs not to you or I, but to the people of the state of Oregon. They should have access to it, and they should have access to us. But Oregonians should feel safe, should be safe. We should be safe while we're in this building, while we're doing the people's work. Legislators and our staff, you know, need that security as they go about the business here. I hope that you would support this resolution and move it to the floor with a due pass recommendation. I'd be happy to answer any questions if there aren't.
Thank you. Representative Cruz?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. A couple. Representative Starr, when did they put in the camera over on the Senate side in the basement?
I am not sure, though. I have talked to, and I bet there's somebody from the Capitol that could answer that specifically, but they're going to put in additional cameras within the next few months in the basement.
I know that's the main issue in all of this has been money more than anything. Making for the legislature to make the commitment to allocate the funds to do it, and certainly I think it's appropriate. I would also point out that we have an inadvertent security system that worked well this morning. I got on the elevator, punched two, arrived at one and three, and totally missed two. So if I was trying to get somebody on two, I wouldn't have been able to get there. But, that's when the elevators work. But,
I would just say that you're right in that we are talking about resources when we talk about security
right.
measures. But the basement of the Capitol especially concerns me. I don't know what kind of cost would be involved to provide each legislator a key card that you'd punch into the machine that would open the arm to let you in. Or the other vendors, how hard it would be to screen those and provide those kinds of device to those as well. It seems to me to be a rather relatively common sense kind of measure. Just the very fact that Capitol basin is just basically open to everyone to drive through there.
I'd also point out, Mr. Chair, that while anybody can drive a Ryder truck into the basement, you can talk to Representative Gardner and find out you can't drive all the way through.
So the Senate vote is safe, is what you see.
A Ryder truck, yeah.
Are there other questions for Representative Stark?
The only question I have, Representative, is what committee would you suggest take a look at this? I mean, and I understand that the measure leaves it up to the discretion of the Speaker, but I'm just wondering if you have a suggestion.
Well, it would make sense to me, Mr. Chair, that an interim committee such as yourself, the committee that touched on before today, would be one that would be appropriate to look at this. But clearly, it would be up to the discretion of the Speaker.
Mm-hmm.
But again, colleagues, I think that this is an opportunity to be proactive, to look for a solution before we have some kind of tragedy.
Sure. Any other questions? Representative Zurd?
I would just thank Representative Stark for bringing this to our attention, to the body's attention. I think it is something that is glaringly needed.
I do have Representative.
Just a comment. Probably the appropriate committee would be the Legislative Administration Committee, which has the responsibility for the building, and that is a joint committee.
Representative is correct.
That's a good point. Okay. Great. Representative, thanks. I will state that when we, of course, scheduled this for today, we didn't realize that it would be so timely with the events that occurred yesterday.
One more question. Was it hard to coordinate that?
How long did it take to construct?
Oh, yeah.
That was a high one.
Thank you
very much.
Thanks, Representative. I know that Dave Henderson is here, and he is willing and able to respond to any questions. And Dave, I don't know if you have anything that you want to add to Representative Starr or any comments that you want to make. Representative Cruz is just telling me that he does have some questions. And so,
when was the camera put in on the Senate side?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, and particularly Representative Cruz, for the record, I'm Dave Henderson. I'm not able to answer all questions. I'm willing to answer all questions. I can get that date for you.
Okay.
I don't have a specific date.
Mr. Chair, my reason for that question, this has been an ongoing discussion for several years now, and especially some concerns from some legislators as to security in the basement itself when you're coming down early morning, late at night, and the fact that somebody else could be in there and to have some way of monitoring who's hanging around in the basement. And it certainly has been a resource issue. And it goes just beyond the hardware. It goes beyond if we're willing to commit to have one of our on-ground troopers actually doing nothing but sitting and watching TV. So there's several issues involved here.
I would agree. Any other questions for Mr. Anderson? Representative March.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dave, do you work with the Joint Legislative Administrative Committee? Yes.
Mr. Chair, Representative March, yes.
Okay, great. Well, one of the, I certainly concur in this idea that, but we also have to make sure that we keep the public access, because this is a public building, and I need the constituents to be able to come to me, and I don't want them going through metal detectors and that sort of thing. If they want to off me, let them off me, I guess. But,
you want that on the record?
Can we vote on that?
Yeah, I've already been on the island, so it doesn't matter anymore, you know.
Right, you're back on the mainland.
we are public servants, and it's vitally necessary for us to be able to interact with our constituents, and we have to balance the security needs, and definitely the basement probably could use more, but we also have to make sure that the public has the right to see us.
Okay. Thank you. Representative Cruz?
Well, we were also talking one point about like a hot button system in the offices and stuff like that. I know is that already there?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, yes, there is a system for people to alert state police if there's a need to...
But it's not like a hot button, is it?
It is.
So my staff knows that if Dan hasn't told me about it.
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, that's probably intentional on their part.
That was the conclusion I came to.
That way they can make choices? Representative Hill, do you have any... I didn't know if you...
Do we have a hot button?
I had heard about that, Mr. Chair, and that's fairly new, or has it been here for a while?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, the system has been here for quite some time. It's gone through some changes, and there are alarm buttons in specific offices, particularly in leadership offices and caucus offices. We do not have one in each individual office because of the difficulty of monitoring all those. But there is a system that has been upgraded, and it does exist.
Can I follow up on that, then?
So
is it kind of like in random legislative offices, so they're kind of spread out on each floor, or... Is it just in the leadership offices?
Mr. Chair, Representative Cruz, I'd like to get back to you on that if I could.
Yeah, yeah, if you would.
Protect leadership or
anything. Yeah. Of course, well, whatsoever.
Okay, are there any other questions for Dave Henderson? And you didn't have a statement that you wanted to make.
Mr. Chair, I don't have a prepared statement. I would just say that we would welcome any effort to review the security needs in the building and upgrade those as appropriate.
Okay. Great. Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Is there anyone else that wants to that would like to testify on House Resolution 6? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing on House Resolution 6. I'm going to open a work session on House Resolution 6.
Chair, don't schedule for work session.
Oh, we didn't schedule a work session.
I won't lift that gavel. I'm going to open the
Okay. Let's see. With that, then, I'm going to open the work session on House Bill 2660. And, Matt, you want to give us just a little update on this?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 2660 was before the committee on Tuesday. It was not scheduled for a work session then. The -2 amendments are included in your packet. And the -2 amendment essentially redefine the term reasonable. And they outline three criteria for that. This was, we covered all of this on Tuesday. We just weren't able to go into work session to talk to them.
Right. Okay.
Mr. Chair?
Representative Hill.
So we're going to assume that we're ready to adopt the -2?
Yes.
I move the -2.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves the -2 amendments to House Bill 2660. Is there Any discussion?
Mr. Chair?
Representative Drew.
I'm just wondering, if we move this bill, will we no longer have a compelling reason to force Burton Weiss to get up early in the morning and come to the Capitol?
I think there's a couple other bills that are probably in the Capitol that Mr. Weiss is following. So.
Okay, well, as long as we have the assurance that he can't goof off in the morning, I'll be okay.
Okay, any other discussion about the Dash 2s? Seeing none, Dash 2s are adopted.
Chair.
Representative Hill.
Move House Bill 2660 as amended to the floor of the Duke House recommendation.
Thank you. Representative Hill moves House Bill 2660 as amended to the floor of the Duke House recommendation. Any discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative Brown. Aye.
House Bill 2660, as amended, having received the constitutional majority, is declared passed. And let's see, Representative, who hasn't carried a bill for us yet?
I think everybody is for Representative Brown.
Representative Brown, would you carry this bill, please?
Sure.
Great. Representative Brown will carry the bill. With that, I will close the work session on House Bill 2660. Thank you.
Okay, yes. Burton, you got to have a little fun here, you know that.
Okay, and I am going to reopen the public hearing on House Bill 3877. And, Matt, you want to give us a little rundown on this, please, and then we'll call for testimony.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3877 creates the position of government efficiency ombudsman within the legislative department, prescribes the duties and authority of the ombudsman, and appropriates money from the general fund.
Okay. And with that, then I will have Jason Williams come forward, please.
Good morning, Chair Crummell, members of the committee. For the record, my name is Jason Williams, Executive Director of the Taxpayer Association of Oregon. And I set out to research about government efficiency and the whole government reinventing government movement this summer, and I was really amazed on how successful it was in other states at the progress of the Al Gore's National Partnership on Reinventing Government. Successes happening in Pennsylvania with Governor Tom Ridge to become a national example. Arizona's Little Miracle Stories, and even the city of Indianapolis. And some of that with a national partnership with Al Gore's things is in the handout. It is a little bit embellished, probably because he was running for office that year when they wrote this, but it does point to some key things that they worked on. And the amazing thing was that they were able to save hundreds of millions of dollars on a statewide level just by reducing cost, cutting out government waste, and becoming more efficient. And in that regard, if I can just give one quick example of like Arizona. Arizona was on the bottom in terms of child support collection and also had problems with the welfare collections. And they went from being ranked number 50th, which meant that they had to get their act together. And so there was kind of the public employees with people in the private sector got together. They were able to sit there and try to think differently in how they can improve their services. And they looked at the steps that they had to follow in terms of collecting child support and realized that, hey, almost 50% of the things that they were doing were not relevant to collecting child support. So they eliminated them. They also used privatized services for child support collections for the money that was owed. And they also privatized some of the genetic testing to identify the paternal responsible. And they also used privatized the payment processing. They said, let's just take it out of this hand. Let's just give it to other people. And the end result is that year after year, they were able to beat the national average in increasing child support collections. And they were able to get the most improved state more than once. And their collections went from something like $50 million to like over $100 million. It was almost triple the amount of money that they're able to bring in. And if you look at what happened, it just simply was using government efficiency measures. just saying, hey, how can we get the money that is deserved to the state and do it better? And it was something that was done in partnership with the state agencies and the private sector. But I could go on to say a lot more success stories, but the important thing that I learned was that other governments tried to replicate the success stories of other efficiency measures and oftentimes failed. It is kind of a cross between the art and the science, and this is something that I would like to see happen in Oregon, because we all need a little bit more money here, and we could all use save quite a few millions. And with that, figuring out of all the employees that we have, we ought to have one person who is an expert on government efficiency, who could look at the entire state budget, can look at all the state agencies, and just figure out where can we find cost savings, how can we use technology to help improve flexibility and improve efficiencies in what they're doing. Now, there's some important components in this measure that I really want to make clear, and one is that this ombudsperson is not to recommend budget cuts or eliminating or reducing services. That, of course, is your guys' role. But rather saying, you know, if we're going to deliver $1,000 to a welfare recipient, it's not the debate about whether that recipient should be getting it or whether that should be reduced, but rather is how can we deliver that same amount of money with the least amount of paperwork, the least amount of administrative or bureaucratic roadblocks as possible. So we're looking at just cost savings, and that is in the measure about not being able to reduce the amount or quality of the service. It's in Section 2.1. The other important thing is, and which could be added to the measure or just added in legislative intent or part of it is an administrative rule, is that this ombudsperson needs to be able to demonstrate cost savings after 2 years, or this position needs to be eliminated. Actually, cost savings to the point of, you know, 3 or 4 times that we're paying for the ombudsperson. And I have linked this to the legislative branch because that in learning the success stories behind other government efficiency measures, they often happen because of certain reasons, either because there's a mandate, you know, their back is against the wall and they have to change, or there's the money not there, or sometimes it's because there's a lot of, there's a charismatic leader, or that there's an innovation movement with a lot of people getting behind it. And when I think about where is the real energy behind trying to find cost-saving ideas, it's always usually in the legislative branch with a few members every year who always just seem to be set upon coming up with great ideas on reducing government. And if I wanted to link that to that energy source so that way that they have an expert and someone who could sit there and give them those needed ideas. So with that, I hope that you can pass House Bill 3877, because I think that there's literally tens of millions of dollars out there that we could save just through cost savings.
Okay. Thank you. Questions, Representative Gerard.
Good morning. I'm not sure I heard correctly, but if this individual doesn't produce 3 times the amount of whatever salary is determined, is the position removed? I mean, is the ombudsman position eliminated, or is that individual eliminated?
I would prefer just to have the whole position eliminated, because it's so easy for these type of things just before you create another position, and I would just like to see the position be eliminated.
Follow up, Representative.
Is that fair? In that you may get the wrong person to start off. I mean, this is a new position. I don't know if that's a fair evaluation of the position, by individual performance.
Chair Crummell, Representative Gerard, I am open to that, on just eliminating the person rather than the position. That you bring up an excellent point.
Thank you. Mr. Chair? Yes, Representative March?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Currently, for example, the state of Texas has an independently elected auditor who does this function. In Oregon, we have the Secretary of State and Division of Audits, and they sort of split their time right now between performance audits and financial audits. and the performance audits are what really get to the dollar savings. That's where we find out where the big savings are. And they have a whole team of auditors who really pore over organizations in fine detail. And we're, in this one, it looks like we're kind of expecting like one person and maybe a couple other staff people to be able to do that same function that was, is already being performed by an existing office. So did you think about the independency of the auditor over the audit function in the Secretary of State's office?
Chair Crummell, Representative Marks, yeah, I did talk to the one of the head people over at the auditor's office, and so there was some understanding. Part of this is that, you know, it hasn't been fleshed out yet, but I didn't see that from our conversation that there was a direct conflict of interest in terms of duplication of effort. I kind of see this as a role where there are performance measurements and performance audits and financial audits, but I see more of the government efficiency is kind of looking at and providing positive solutions, saying, hey, here's a way that the Internet had drastically reduced costs for registrations and whatnot. And that's something that proactive suggesting of ideas and then jumping around to different agencies and saying, by the way, this agency has the same problem and could benefit from that same use of technology. I think that sometimes that proactiveness is something that the auditor's office sometimes misses, because sometimes they can identify problems and identify that you're missing the mark, or that this money is at risk of being abused or has been abused. But I see much more of a proactive role.
Well, follow-up, Representative.
Thank you. You mentioned that a lot of people around here, or a few people around here, had great ideas on reducing government. Is that your goal here in this?
Chair Crummell, Representative Marketing, great people. Yeah, there's great ideas here. Here in Oregon, we see some of them being implemented with the Department of Human Resources trying to consolidate services. And I would love to be able to give them just kind of the collective knowledge from what's happening around in the country to be able to say, hey, here you are trying to consolidate services. What can we learn from how it's been done with other states so you can even do it even better?
So you'd like to see a little government reduced?
Yes.
Thank you. Yeah.
I would point out that the auditors within their position is to identify problems that are in, or identify performance measures that are not being met, but it's not within their purview really to go in and they might make recommendations, but it's not within their purview to really go in and help the department implement whatever some of the solutions might be or some of the performance measures they might identify. Whereas I'm sort of viewing this, and if I read this correctly, that would sort of be the job of this ombudsperson, then would be to, they could go over the audit with a department, for example, and then talk about the different things that have been, solutions that have been tried in other states, and kind of help the department with the actual implementation. And is that kind of the goal that you're seeing?
Representative Crummell, yes, exactly.
So the legislative branch would become the administrative branch in implementing these functions.
The executive branch is still going to be the implementer of the measures, but I think if you have the ombudsperson that is able to help the department in terms of implementation and in terms of helping them make their case before the legislature for any changes in statutes that maybe need to be made to give them the authority to do the implementation to improve on the audit, I think that would be the overall goal. That's just sort of the administration or the executive branch and the legislative branch working a little closer together in that respect.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment based on my 6+ years experience as a performance auditor. We generally, when we went in an audit and found problems, by the time we were leaving the audit, our departments were changing and were actually you'll see that in the audit. You'll see a response to the audit, what the department is doing differently to overcome the problems identified in the audit. And if they don't do that, then that's when the legislature slaps them down, and or the governor. Nobody wants to leave dangling problems out there, or they lose their jobs.
Thanks. Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Williams? I represent the group.
Just a comment. No problem with the intent here. Problem with the name, I think. Because Los Angeles Winters is working right now to create an state ombudsman office, kind of like it used to be, so that there's like a one-point contact for the people of Oregon that have issues with the state. And so if we're going to do this, I think we should probably call it something different so we aren't confusing that issue. But.
Yeah. Yeah, Chair Cruz, members of the Chair Cruz, Chair Crummel, Representative Cruz, yeah. benefit from that same use of technology. I think that sometimes that proactiveness is something that the auditor's office sometimes misses, because sometimes they can identify problems and identify that you're missing the mark, or that this money is at risk of being abused or has been abused, but I see much more of a proactive role.
I'll follow up, Representative.
Thank you. You mentioned that a lot of people around here, or a few people around here, had great ideas on reducing government. Is that your sort of your goal here in this?
Chair Crummell, Representative Marching, great people. If there's great ideas here, here in Oregon, we see some of them being implemented with the, you know, Department of Human Resources trying to consolidate services. And I would love to be able to give them just kind of the collective knowledge from what's happening around in the country to be able to say, hey, here you are trying to consolidate services. What can we learn from how it's been done with other states so you can even do it even better?
So you'd like to see a little government reduced?
Yes.
Thank you.
I would point out that the auditors within their position is to identify problems that are in, or identify performance measures that are not being met, but it's not within their purview really to go in and make, they might make recommendations, but it's not within their purview to really go in and help the department implement whatever some of the solutions might be, or some of the performance measures they might identify, whereas I'm sort of viewing this, and if I read this correctly, that would sort of be the job of this ombudsperson, then would be to, they could go over the audit with a department, for example, and then talk about the different things that have been, solutions that have been tried in other states, and kind of help the department with the actual implementation. And is that kind of the goal that you're seeing?
Representative Crummell, yes, exactly.
So the legislative branch would become the administrative branch in implementing these
functions. The executive branch is still going to be the implementer of the measures, but I think if you have the ombudsperson that is able to help the department in terms of implementation and in terms of helping them make their case before the legislature for any changes in statute that maybe need to be made to give them the authority to do the implementation to improve on the audit. I think that would be the overall goal. That's just sort of the administration or the executive branch and the legislative branch working a little closer together in that respect.
Yeah, I'll just make a comment based on my 6-plus years experience as a performance auditor. We generally, when we went in an audit and found problems, by the time we were leaving the audit, our departments were changing and were actually, you'll see that in the audit. You'll see a response to the audit, what the department is doing differently to overcome the problems identified in the audit. And if they don't do that, then that's when the legislature slaps them down, and or the governor. Nobody wants to leave dangling problems out there, or they lose their job. So,
sure.
Thanks.
Thank you. Any other questions for Mr. Williams? Representative,
just a comment. No problem with the intent here. Problem with the name, I think, because Representative Winters is working right now to create an state ombudsman office, kind of like it used to be, so that there's like a one-point contact for the people of Oregon that have issues with the state. And so if we're going to do this, I think we should probably call it something different so we aren't confusing that issue. But,
yeah. Yeah, Chair Cruz, Chair Crummell, Representative Cruz. I think you can. There's a lot of different names. You could have a commissioner in there, and I would just say that. So it would be very helpful, I think, for with new members and House members. When you look at that budget, you're talking $34 billion, and it is so difficult to try to be able to sit there and figure out. Well, I wonder if there could be a cost savings here, and so And on the other hand, a lot of times the reason why we haven't seen a lot of government efficiencies is because the the public servants, their hands are often tied. You know, they're kind of boxed in the system where they can't get out. And I was thinking in Pennsylvania where when they finally asked the public employees, like, how would you change welfare? One of the ideas that came up was, well, let's stop giving welfare to people behind bars. And it was something like that I'm guessing that they people knew about, but they just didn't have the power or, you know, to kind of come in there and say, hey, let's get this on the table here. Let's eliminate this. And so they started eliminating people that were in prison from receiving welfare. So I think that our state agencies could really use the help also to be able to have an expert to say, well, we see this problem. Let's now try to identify you with legislators and success stories around other states and technologies that could help you deal with that problem.
Representative Bruce?
Yeah. It just brought up, and I don't know if this gets good or not, one of the frustrations I have had was the fact that state employees are pretty much tied, at least in this process, to coming in and defending budgets whether they like them or not. And a good example would be the FDSC budget that was just devastated in the governor's budget. And so these people had to come in, you know, because they work for the governor. And there's no way for the governor's employees to come in and talk about how they really feel about things. Is there any way that this actually for that sort of give and take to happen, that would have to happen in the interim in the budget formation process. But you know, it would be nice if there was some way that we could get to the point where these agency officials could actually say in committee what they will tell me behind closed doors in my office, so that we have a record for true feelings on the record, which we don't have now. Is there any way that this rolls into that sort of thing? Or?
Chair Crummell, Representative Cruz, I do like this idea because of having a fellow employee who can build bridges with people within the state agencies and can talk to them on a one-on-one basis and say, hey, we're seeing a cost per unit higher in this area than other states. What's really going on? And sometimes by talking to people on the level, on the ground level, you can come up with those success stories. And that's what something that with Pennsylvania had done, where the governor and lieutenant governor just basically went around the whole state. They had public meetings, town halls, where they invited all the public employees to come and said, hey, you know, you guys are having a difficult job trying to balance everything. What do you suggest? And they started coming up with so many great ideas. They started publishing a newsletter and all kinds of awards. And so the ideas just started to flow that didn't exist before. So, but in order for that to happen, you've got to create a bridge to the people, to our public employees on the ground level who are actually doing it. And I think by having a this figure, to be able to, who they can approach with ideas, and that person can then go and research it, and can be able to help solve that problem.
Mm-hmm. Yes, Mr. Chair, the latest example we talked about, because you mentioned the Department of Human Services organization, and we've got all these whistleblower laws and all that are supposed to protect everybody, and I've got folks coming in under the cover of darkness to tell me about what's really going on, afraid of repercussions if they come out in public, and so, you know, there is a disconnect in the system here.
They come in through the basement.
They come in through the basement, and thank God there's no cameras.
How do you know that?
Well, there's one on the center side. Okay.
Any other questions for Mr. Williams? I would point out very early in my political career, one of the books that I read, and the author, the name of the author is actually escaping me at this point, but the name of the book is Reinventing Government. And actually, I think it's the book that Al Gore read to get the idea to. But anyway, and it does with Indianapolis and some of the things that went on in Pennsylvania. But it does give some very good examples, and we actually used some of those some of the ideas in the city of Wilsonville when I was a mayor, as far as looking at performance-based budgeting, looking at how we could get more for less without cutting services, how we could reduce administrative costs so that the money that was supposed to go into services was actually going into services and not to feed this bureaucracy at City Hall. And it was a very big help. So I encourage this sort of a thing. And if anybody hasn't read that book, I would suggest that you, if you're interested in some performance types of things and efficiency types of things, that it would be a very good book to read. Representative Gerard?
Mr. Chairman, I've heard you reference this quite often. Can you tell me who is Al Gore?
Yes, he's a former vice president.
Hey, thank you very much.
We faintly remember him.
Mr. Chairman, Al Gore is ran down from the government, started in the Bush administration.
When he was in the Senate, right?
No, the father was president.
Okay. Thank you very much, Jason, for coming up. I appreciate it, and thanks for bringing this forward. Is there anyone else who would like to testify on House Bill 3877? Rich, I see you sitting back there. You don't feel like you have to come up, but if you want.
Mr. Chair, I appreciate the invitation. Rich Pepper,
never turned down an invitation. Right?
That's right. Rich Pepper is with Service Employees in International Union Local 503 OPEU. And I just walked in late. I missed the entire conversation that you were having before I got here. I just wanted to stop by and there are other bills up that I need to get back to as well. But I just wanted to say that one of our concerns around a charge for a position like this would be that it shouldn't be viewed as trying to create a race to the bottom in terms of how employees are paid and are compensated. So, because you can always find efficiencies by paying people less and finding a way to eliminate the health care coverage or one thing or another. And so that would be a big concern for us. And that's the only issue I wanted to bring to your mind, and I didn't see anything in the bill that indicated that, but it's just something to have on the record that it doesn't make sense in terms of public policy, I would argue, or we would argue that the cost of people who don't have health care coverage and people who don't have a retirement plan and whatnot wind up being absorbed by the state in other ways through social programs.
Appreciate your comments. Any questions for Mr. Crickers? I know you admitted that you hadn't been here earlier, and one of the things that Mr. Williams did preface his comments about was that, and it's actually in the bill, as he pointed out, is that it's not the idea of reducing the quality of service or the services that are being, but how can services be delivered in a more efficient manner. But I appreciate your comments.
Thank you.
Thank you. Is there anybody else who would like to testify on House Bill 3877? Seeing none, I'm going to close the public hearing. We have gone through our agenda. We are finished. Seeing nothing else before us, so we will stand adjourned.